Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, the second last of the year, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, the Brownlow Medal wash-up, the Waffle Grand Final, and two big preliminary finals, and a little touch on the Grand Final upcoming.
That was out of bounds! I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh!
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, it's Tuesday. It's Grand Final week. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, the first one of Grand Final week. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times, and Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian. It is the morning after the Brownlow Medal, Tommy Mitchell's first Brownlow Medal.
Go, Tommy.
May not be his last Brownlow Medal, I suspect.
I wouldn't have thought so, yeah.
If he continues to play the way he's been playing. Quarters, the count, what jumped out at you? What surprised you?
Jason Johannes' suit surprised me and jumped out at me.
And how many animals died for his wife's death? Wife's dress as well. That was
like, yes. What? Look, I think
she entered the room while that was turning out of Bourke Street.
Well, there were some surprises there on the red carpet, that's for sure. I think Tom Mitchell was a deserved winner. I'm glad he won, and not just with my Hawthorn hat on, because my TAB account's a little, my Tab Touch account's a little stronger this morning, but he deserved to win. What did he get? 6 BOGs, 28 votes.
Polled in 12 games.
And I'm really happy that Sidebottom gave him a run for his money, because I think I've said in recent weeks, how has this bloke not won a Brownlow and has had a really good year, still Sidebottom, and we'll get to it later in the week, but I think he's really the key to Saturday's grand final as well. But still Sidebottom. And Angus Brayshaw jumped out at me, 21 votes, third place. It says to me, if you start polling when you're young, you're going to keep polling when you're older, and wouldn't be surprised to see Charlie hanging around his neck at some stage.
So, started the year in the VFL, didn't get an invite to the Brownlow, which for you evokes memories of the Graham Teasdale win, I think it was 1977.
77, when it was held at the Southern Cross in Melbourne, and turned up about five rounds in when he got the quick phone call. Didn't have a suit, so they went to the cloakroom and they found the only suit that someone had left there, and because it was brown velour, and of course someone had left it there conveniently. So, sorry, Teaser, here's your suit for tonight. So he's up on stage at the end getting his Brownlow with his ugly brown velour suit on.
Well, but I have to say, that is the presentation we all remember from those days as a result of the brown velour suit.
Oh, we do. And they were the days when the captains were up on stage, and it was the old, no digital presentation, folks. It was just an old roll. It was like a bookies board.
Yeah.
And they would just roll the numbers forward. And the captain from each club would have to stand up there for the duration of the count. So it's pretty tight. You reckon it's tiresome now? It's pretty tiresome back then. Great memories.
I went to Crown Perth. The Eagles had, of course, had their function there because requirement for TV purposes, because they can't fly to Melbourne being in the grand final. There was Elliot Yeo, who polled quite well. Jack Darling, who only got two votes for his 6-goal, 15-mark effort against Richmond early in the season. So
there's always some puzzling games.
Midfielders medal. Jack Redden polled a few. Lewis Jetta was there. Chris Marston, Shannon Hearn. So a few of the Eagles players turned up and flew the flag for their
A tedious night, and for them it is. They're not there. They're not part of the Crown. I go back to my earlier point. This should be done in the bye week. This should be done at the very start of the finals.
Yep.
Takes the distraction away. If you win it, like Steele Sidebottom wins it last night, it's not fair on him, I don't think. He's got that to deal with. That's a lot of distractions in the rest of the week. And the Eagles can't get to travel and enjoy what's a great night. And they should be afforded that opportunity, which is why it should be in the bye week. And it should suit the interstate clubs.
I absolutely agree with that. And imagine, Quarters, so imagine it's the last home and away set of home and away games, and one of the favourites gets reported in the Sunday game.
Yeah.
And you've got to have an expedited tribunal hearing on the Monday.
Brilliant.
It'll be just like the theatre.
It's great theatre. I hadn't thought of that, but maybe, very excited.
Maybe on the Tuesday after round 23, not on the Monday.
Oh, dear.
Because you'd have to allow for, you'd have to allow for an appeals tribunal and all those sorts of things.
Interesting. Just very briefly to cross codes too, a fair bit happening in the NRL at the moment with Billy Slater and that shoulder charge.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even be looked at in the AFL because we're generally outcomes.
Yep.
It's really interesting. And I've watched this many, many times and I don't think there's much in it at all, but they're the rules and I think he should be rubbed out because they are the rules.
Because they are the rules.
Can't be a Billy Slater rule because he's a good bloke and it's his grand final swan song.
That's what they do in the AFL.
Yeah, well, they do, yeah. A la Trent Cotchin last year, but we won't go there, Duff.
So let's talk about the local teams and how they polled. Andrew Gaff, 16 votes. Sort of, I thought he might have picked up a few more votes early, and then he sort of, like, came through the field a little bit.
Refresh me, how did he go in the derby, when he was in the derby, sorry?
Yeah, I think he had 33 and he kicked one, but I think...
Did he get votes?
No, he didn't get votes.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah, Elliot Yeo was the Glendinning medalist that day, so he got votes. I think Lachie Neal... also had an absolute blinder. He got votes that day as well. So, and I think Jack Redden, who we all rated very highly that day, got votes. Elliot Yeo got 15. The Eagles thought Yeo was a smoky. They thought there was a period between rounds about 13 and rounds 21 where they thought he'd poll very well.
I have a theory on Yeo, and I have a theory on Brownlow medalists. I reckon there has to be a build into a Brownlow medal.
So you've got to have that year where you get their attention and then you get the year where you cash
and
in.
And I think Yeo has had two of them. Last year, back flank. This year, he's moved into the midfield, which may have even cost him because there have been so many great midfielders. But I think, put it this way, if I was a betting man and I'm not Duff, I might just have a sneaky look at Elliot's price post-season in the week or two post-season. I might get on because I reckon he's going to go close next year. And the other one is how well Nat Fyfe polls.
Yeah.
He's not missing those games with a hammy. He's not getting suspended. He's going to give this a run for its money.
Yeah, correct. 16 votes for Nathan Fyfe. He led Fremantle. Lachie Neal, 11. Pretty solid count for him. Seemed happy enough at the Fremantle table, laughing and having a few beers with
his team. Wouldn't you?
David Mundy and Michael Walters, 8 each. Just going a bit further down the tally for West Coast, Jack Darling, 11. Jack Redden, 10. Jack Redden's had some kind of season.
He has. Well, he's had some kind of final series. For me, he's the best finals player so far.
Yep.
I reckon. And so he keeps that form up. You never know. Normie might be visiting him on Saturday afternoon.
So we'll move on to the grand final in a minute. But let's take care of a few things first. West Perth and Subiaco in the Waffle Grand Final.
So what happened to the bus stuff? I went to the game. What happened to the bus? West Perth didn't turn up. Was there a tyre blown or something on the way? What happened?
Yuck.
Oh, mate. Yuck. I was there and I was disinterested by quarter time. And I was trying to keep my kids interested. Now, good effort to get there. They've had a hard year, but that was a shocking grand final.
I agree it was a shocking grand final. But the thing that it said to me was that the WA Football Commission has to get absolutely fair dinkum about competition equalisation. Well done to Subiaco. They are an extremely well-run club. They are an extremely well coached and organised club, but they are a club that is resourced on a level which is probably double every other Waffle club.
Every time they got the footy, there were five or six blokes running in front of the footy, and West Perth had no hope. And which would have played into the West Perth hands had they been able to get enough of the footy, but it was some sort of game for Cole Horsley.
Yeah.
And we are throwing out a bit of a brickbat, we should throw out a bouquet as well. Colts, reserves and league. Tremendous effort from Subi this year, an extremely well-coached side.
So first time in 1971 years a club has gone through the seniors undefeated to win. First time ever we think that a club has won Colts and reserves and league.
Yep.
Again, fantastic achievement, but again, massive red flag for the West Australian Football Commission about doing something about equalising the competition. And if you take out Peel and a line club, and what they did in the 2 years previous, we're talking about utter and complete domination of the competition from Subiaco. So
it's a good. We've talked about the Eagles and Freo having reserve sides. So West Coast will have one next year, and we assume Freo maybe the year after. It's a real opportunity.
Why
now.
Do we assume that?
I think Freo will have to.
Why are Fremantle unhappy? I don't see anything. The Fremantle amalgamation with Peel works far better than West Coast with East Perth.
It does, but I just feel that there'll be... I think the Eagles will work well having a standalone reserves team. We don't know what the parameters around that are going to be yet, but I just think Freo will see it as an advantage they need down the track.
I would like Fremantle if they do that, I would like them to enunciate what advantages they believe. Because to me, all their players play together. That Cam Shepherd is basically Fremantle's coach. They play Fremantle game plan and game style, which is not a great thing at the moment, but eventually we hope it would be a good thing. I don't see anything that it offers, apart from a drain on their resources, because at the moment they share the cost of running this team with Peel. West Coast will front and foot the bill for running their own team. Now, West Coast can afford to do that. Fremantle is more financially marginal than West Coast. Like, to me, if I'm Fremantle, I'm staying put for 5 years and just sussing it out and see, and not doing that 8-year-old thing where, he's got one, so I want one.
Yeah, well, it's a bit untidy, though. But I think Peel, there's definitely going to be a Peel presence. Peel Thunder will exist in the Waffle going forward, as will the Joondalup Falcons. But I think we'll eventually see West Coast and Freo reserves teams and a few amalgamations within the existing clubs.
Quarters, I don't see how Peel survives without the alignment.
Yeah, okay.
With Fremantle.
Yeah, I think, well, they have to. You need a team in that Southern Corridor.
Well, in that case, leave them with Fremantle.
Yeah.
And again, Fremantle may reserve the right to have their own team. I would like Fremantle to clearly enunciate what is the advantage. Because to me, I think the West Coast East Perth thing is a fail on the part of both parties.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't work well together. There was a lot of bitterness and infighting about, you know, how players should be used. West Coast didn't like the fact that some of their players had to play resis. But if you're playing resis in the Waffle, you're a long way away from an AFL game.
Or coming back from injury. Yes, I know what you're saying. If you're regularly playing reserves in the Waffle, you are, yes.
Absolutely. Yep. And, to me, I think it's one of those arms race things that AFL clubs get into where, you know, someone else is doing it, so we need to do it. Whether really worrying about whether it's needed. Quarters, 25,000 people there at the grand final, which was fantastic.
Great venue. Please continue it at that venue. Enjoyed it. I think they needed that many, or just slightly under that number, to break even to allow it to continue there. I think it's a win. It's a tick. Continue it at that venue on that day.
I agree. Interesting, the game of the day was the Colts when Subiaco snatched a 2-point win from
with an extra in defence.
Swan Districts. They put numbers behind the ball. Watch this space on this one.
You now, reckon it's going somewhere, do you?
They will not take the points off them. They will not take the flag off Alan Joyce.
Yeah.
They will not replay the game. But I think just talking to a few people from around the traps, Colts coach has got a very clear instruction. You do this, your job is on the line. And Swan Districts hit the front in the last quarter and didn't do it because they adhered to the spirit of the instruction. And Subiaco did it. They say it was a miscommunication. That is the greatest load of bollocks I've ever heard in my life. There were a number of players behind the ball. There were players who had been playing deep forward who were behind the ball. It was a clear... unless the runner and the coach speak a different language, it was a clear instruction from the coach to put numbers behind
the ball. So when you say, watch this space, so the rule, I believe...
I think if they're dinking about this, Bo Wardman, the Subiaco coach, his job should be on the line.
Okay.
Now, I'm told he's a contender for the Subiaco senior position if Jared Schofield moves on. To me, it should be a situation where the commission actually says to Subiaco, well, you know what? We would have sacked him as the Colts coach for what he did in the grand final. You appoint him as the senior coach, you don't get your grant.
Mm-hmm.
Which they shouldn't do anyway because they've got too much money.
And
that's why they're so dominant. But that's a pretty simple thing to me. If you either back these instructions or you don't. When a bunch of kids from Swan Districts have possibly lost a grand final because the other team followed a different set of guidelines to the ones they were given, I think you're entitled to say, we want someone to pay for
What's the rule now? I think it's if you digress twice, it's a free kick to the other side.
The umpire issued a warning.
Yeah, and then it's a free kick on a second offence. I think that's the way it stands.
Should be first offence, free kick.
Second offence, goal.
No. First offence, free kick, 50-metre penalty, take them close enough so that it's a goal. That's how you stop it. All this business about having the commission having to retrospectively visit these things and try and work out what to do about it, like the Sandful
It was interesting, wasn't it? We were talking about that last week, and they were issuing, where they were suggesting that should that happen, it's really interesting we got to this situation.
Do it on the field, deal with it on the field, and have the mechanisms in place on the field so that if and when it's detected, you pay the penalty. Free kick, 50, goal. In fact, just automatic free kick from the top of the goal square. Goal.
Or just give him a goal and bounce it. We should talk about two other very important games over the weekend. It's been a pretty ordinary final series if you look at it from an aesthetic point of view. It hasn't been a close game yet. We all like close finals. You expect them in preliminary finals. Friday night, there's a bit of wow factor about that because I think we just didn't expect it. We expected Richmond to win, but should Richmond lose, we expected them to run them pretty close. So it was all over, really, at halftime, as it was in the other game. And
well, the other one was over
I think for me, if you had to look at one aspect of Friday night's game, 39-point loss by Richmond, it was still Sidebottom running around on his own. Mm. I think there was a fair bit of arrogance about Richmond. Arrogance that it had been a long time since they won a flag. They'd had a great run with injuries. Everything had gone their way, and they just expected we play our way, we win. And there was a lot. Now, I'm not saying that what supporters think permeates to players necessarily, but there was a lot of, I hope we play West Coast and not Melbourne in the grand final because we're more worried about Melbourne before this game was played. So I'm suggesting that they just thought they were going to get over Collingwood. And I think still Sidebottom for me is going to be a key to the grand final. I think he's been one of the players of the season.
And he will be tagged.
Yeah, of course. Well, and I think we know who's going to him. But for him to be running out around on his own post the second half was ridiculous. And I think they deserve what they got. And I think they got a bit ahead of themselves, Richmond.
You can put we will play our way alongside there is a flat earth, a Santa Claus, a tooth fairy and an Easter bunny.
Yep.
You're playing, at this stage of the competition, you're playing the best teams in the competition that have some of the best players in the competition that can seriously hurt you. Did West Coast would say that they played their way against Melbourne, but they also pretty much tagged Max Gawn.
Absolutely tagged him, and it was brilliant coaching.
And Adam Simpson had a magnificent day in the coach's box, and they also pushed numbers further towards the contest so that when Melbourne got the ball and tried to do their ballistic ball movement, there were too many West Coast jumpers around them, and they panicked, made bad decisions. Jordan Lewis.
Well,
that's nearly a career ender for Jordan Lewis.
It should be. I think with Jordan's been fantastic. He would not be playing at Hawthorn now. He's been really good for Melbourne, has played a very important role, leadership down back, bringing on some of those younger players. I think what happens is when age catches up with you, it never exposes you more than in a final.
Yep.
And forget about the poor game and the disposal errors, gave away the first goal. The 50-metre penalties late too. I think that just shows Jordan's been a stellar career and you've been a great addition to Melbourne for a couple of years. Time to go.
Yeah. Melbourne were poor, but we don't want to focus too much on that because it kind of takes away from how good West Coast were. And West Coast were absolutely magnificent.
And I think you're right about the Gawn. So you had two ruckmen, just not allowing him to float forward or back, where he's been doing you're going to concede he's going to win his fair share of taps, but he's been doing the most of the damage, floating forward or floating back. They didn't allow him to do it. It was brilliant. And there'll be a bit of attention put onto Grundy in the same way this week.
They'll have a mechanism in place. It may not be exactly the same
mechanism. Well, they're not the same players, Grundy and Gawn.
But they'll have a mechanism in place to try and cope with Brodie Grundy and limit his influence on the game. Expect Mark Hutchings to pay some degree of attention to steal Sidebottom. Now, whether that's a full-blown tag or whether that's sort of like what we call the accountable midfielder's role, where he tries to win some of the ball, he tries to expose him when Sidebottom...
We don't let him run around on his own.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is what happened at the weekend.
Yeah.
Degoe's the other one too. He was magnificent, four goals.
They divided and conquered the Richmond defence, didn't they?
And with Cox, they just look split and without ideas.
Yeah.
And you never see that without Richmond defence.
Yeah. And I think the other mistake Richmond made, I mean, caught between the devil and the deep blue sea with Dustin Martin. He's clearly injured.
Had to play.
But he has to play. David Asprey spent time in hospital the day before the game.
So he had gastro.
Was sucking in the big ones at the national anthem.
Yeah.
If you go back and watch a replay of that, he looked like he was...
Crook.
Dis... uncomfortable at the national anthem, and he had a shocker.
So will we find out when the time, in due course, that there was a bit of a gastro go through that side on the eve of that game?
Maybe.
Because that's a possibility. Yeah. I know they isolated him, but did they isolate him too late? You just don't know. That does happen.
Yeah.
It was a very poor performance after a great year, with one caveat. Jack Riewoldt
was magnificent.
All done, all gone, can't win, stands up with five goals. Mm. That's the sort of year, that's the sort of 2 years he's had.
Yeah.
Hats off to Jack Riewoldt. Hats off to Richmond. It was a shot. It wasn't a great exit, but it's a good premiership defence for mine. They finished top four. They won't be happy with the preliminary final defeat, but that's a good premiership defence. They were good. They were the best side this year, just not the best side when it counted.
I think to objective observers like us, we can say that was a good premiership defence. Yep. I think they will feel absolutely gutted, and they will feel like it's a massive missed opportunity.
It is a massive missed opportunity. It is, but it's still a good premiership defence to finish top four and to win a final, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
They're tough to win.
But again, I think it's easy for us to say that from where we sit.
Oh, mate, I've been on the end of preliminary final losses and grand final losses. And I'm telling you, after a grand final loss, for at least for a week, you don't concede it's been a good year. It's been a crap year. Don't give me that. It's been a crap year. That's how you feel. But you've got to look at it objectively, and you've got to say that. I think just with the Collingwood, we have Howe with an ankle. De Goey had some issues, but I think both of them are going to play. I think the real speculation comes whether they do replace a Gold Sack with a Reed or a Moore. I don't think they're going to. I think it'll be the 22.
But what I'm hearing about Darcy Moore is that Darcy Moore has gotten so gun-shy about his hamstrings that he's reluctant to play. So Collingwood actually feels that he's ready and that they could play him.
Who would you play? Would you stick with Goldsack? I think he was pretty good in the qualifying final. He was pretty good.
If it's wet,
yep,
I'd stay with Goldsack.
Yep.
If it's dry, I would probably still stay with Goldsack, but I would give strong consideration
to Moore. Reed hasn't played since round 10.
Moore, I think.
A big risk, mate. You won if he pulls the string early, you're one short, big risk.
Well, I took a massive punt with Goldsack in there.
And he hasn't really let them down, though.
No.
So why do you risk him?
Yep. Here's a bit of a test for your quarters, for your sense of humour.
Yes.
The best quote from the Brownlow medal.
Oh, you tell me. What was it?
Got to be Jack Higgins, doesn't it?
What was the Jack Higgins quote?
My heart's going at 1,000 minutes a second.
Yeah. It was by the way.
Do you reckon Jack's had a bit of a mad Monday?
I think he might have, yeah. Well, yeah, as if his heart's going a million miles a second. But
needed a translator for the first half of his speech.
But he does. That's what we love about Jack Higgins. And I'm glad that was goal of the year. It was a great goal. Yeah, he's a character. He's great for our game. He's been a real plus this year, I reckon, Jack Higgins.
And, of course, the other funny moment was Tommy Mitchell up giving his speech.
Oh, with Clarko.
Thanking Clarko, and Clarko looks like he's asleep in his chair.
I don't think he was. Like, in his defence, I think it's one of those moments where you've got your head down and you're just focusing on, because it's so much noise around
him. He was contemplating.
He's contemplating what was going on, and I reckon
he was going, geez, I haven't won a flag for 3 years. Life's pretty tough.
Yeah, no premiership medal, remember, under the Christmas tree. What are we going to do? I think he's a couple of sage words of advice there too for Mitchell. I'm sure that would have been a bit of, make sure you thank the right people. But he was very polished, Tom Mitchell, too. He's a solid performer in the spotlight. A
couple of other things we should mention about that. Neville Jetta, wonderful effort from him winning the Citizenship Award, the Jim Steins Award. When the list of charities that he was involved with and integral to, just an absolutely amazing effort from him. Obviously a proud Indigenous man, very aware of his role as an Indigenous role model. And I thought a magnificent, the way he spoke about his parents and the values they instilled in him, I thought that was absolutely magnificent on stage. And, of course, the mark of the year, Isaac Heaney, the
I'm glad. Swan. Yeah, when they showed the three, first thing I said to my kids was, "That I hope that wins. That's the mark of the year for mine."
I love Charlie Cameron's mark.
It was a good mark.
Myself.
They're just all good marks.
Coming from the side and sort of trampolining over the top of the pack, I thought that was a magnificent mark. But I have no problem with Heaney getting it.
On to Saturday, 59,608, a record by about 20. I think it set a new record by about 20. This would continue to happen, of
course. You wonder what happens to the other 400. Like, did their bus break down? Did they have someone sick at home?
Had a couple at the Canfield and just got a bit, relaxed and thought, I'll stay there.
Canfield gets a bit willing.
It does. It's good.
AFL games.
So 66 point defeat over at halftime. It was over at halftime when it was 10-9-0-6. Lowest score in a final in the first half since what, 1920?
It was about 1921, I think. Yeah.
So they really, as we suggested earlier, there was a there were a couple of things. There was the Gorn tactic. There was the extra numbers at the contest. So when Melbourne did exit the contest, they really panicked and they were trying to handball to get out of trouble. It was never going to work. It was a magnificent effort. Lots of offensively great effort by the Eagles too. There was some concerns. Someone said to me, "Oh, they've missed opportunities early." I didn't think they had. I thought they had. There were a couple of reverse goals, so that didn't concern me. I thought they were hitting the scoreboard regularly enough, given the time they had with the footy.
So
Cripps 3.
He's having a season, isn't he?
And he's terribly underrated, and he really is. Kennedy 4, Darling 3, Lacroix 3. There's so many options there. The small forwards were good. We'll give our tips on Thursday, but I'm leaning West Coast way for sure. I think that Collingwood have got more concerns about West Coast than West Coast have about Collingwood. That's my opinion at this stage.
I think West Coast have only got really one concern about Collingwood, but I think it's a major one.
Yeah.
And that's the midfield. I think West Coast will feel like if they, particularly if it's wet, which I think will neutralise Mason Cox.
Yep. They did okay against Mason Cox last time. I think he's, again, I think there was a fair bit of arrogance about Richmond last week. He won't kick another 3.25.
Degoe will be a worry for them, but I think their main concern will be Collingwood bats very deep in the midfield.
They do.
Can we keep that under control and make sure that the forwards have equal opportunity?
But despite Gaff's absence, so does West Coast now, though. And we've seen the emergence of players. We spoke about Redden, who I believe is the best player in the finals. The other key to it is 12 of the 22 played in the 2015 GF. Now, I know that Adam Simpson's already said that we're not worried about the past, we're worried about now. But you know what? That's a recent grand final. That's a recent, but more importantly, that's recent grand final week experience.
It's a massive stat.
That's a huge stat. They know what the week's going to bring. And there's not many who don't. So
assuming no changes for Collingwood, five.
No changes for West Coast for mine, I don't think. I think McGovern gets up. Well, he gets up. I mean, he's got a hit point. He'll get out. He'll play.
Yeah.
And Shuey, I think, is okay. I was a bit worried when I saw him hobbling around.
Shuey was I actually walked into the club with Luke yesterday. He arrived at the same time as me. I was going there for training in Adam Simpson's press conference. Huge crowd, by the way.
15.
Yeah, I didn't think quite 15. I thought more like I noticed the sub editors changed my story. I had more than 10. They just put 15 in. that was obviously the common logic. And
well, let's call it a truckload of people. It's a lot of people.
So the lower tier at Subiaco, I'm guessing it holds about 24,000 because it was a 42,000 seat stadium, and you'd expect the lower tier to hold the bulk of those. It was about not quite two-thirds full, I reckon.
Is it a farewell to the old lady?
Yeah, I reckon it is.
It is. That's it for Subi.
Yeah, so West Coast will be at Lath Lane pretty much by the start of next year.
Hmm.
Obviously, they train at Lath Lane tomorrow, I believe. Then they have their last training session at the MCG after the parade on Friday. So that would be it for Subiaco. They won't be doing a recovery session.
No,
either way.
No, I think. Well, I know that if they do, if they are lucky enough, and even if they don't win, I think Langley Park is the choice for the post match on Sunday. So we'll wait and see what happens. But could either be a forlorn place or a place of great excitement down there. We'll see what happens.
I'm with you. I think McGovern gets up. Shuey had his ankle bandaged but went out trained, showed no ill effects. He will be fine. Jamie Cripps and Nathan Vardy had light sessions that took them a while to come out, but they came out and they did some ball work. They looked fine. McGovern expects to train tomorrow at Lath Lane Park. But
even if he doesn't, mate, he's going to play.
Well, Adam Simpson just said, look, he doesn't train much. And so he said, look, we'll assess him, we'll manage him. He said, if he's not right, we're not going to be playing games, but we expect him to be fine. I expect Jeremy McGovern to be out there, and I expect Chris Main to be right alongside him. I think that will be one matchup
you can bank on. Resurgence.
And he's one of the five Collingwood players who will have grand final experience. So, of course, Main played for Fremantle in 2013.
Varco would be another.
Varco played with Geelong in 2011. Goldsack, Pendlebury and Sidebottom.
Yeah. And Goldsack's game, from memory, he was a late in, wasn't he, for the replay?
Kicked the first goal in the replay.
Yeah. So,
came in for Leon Davis, I think.
He did.
From memory.
He did come in for Leon Davis. Controversially,
yes. All right. We will be back on Thursday. We will talk in detail about the game and what may happen. At this stage, Quarters, I'm going to tip West Coast.
Well, I'm tipping West Coast by 24 points. I won't be changing that.
I'm tipping West Coast by about 15 points. Mm. Unlikely to change that. Oh, one more. The grand final umpires. The same three that did the Friday night game between Richmond and Collingwood, which is Rosebery, Stevic, and Ryan.
Ryan, okay.
Yeah. None of the three from the Saturday afternoon game between West Coast and Melbourne. I'm pleased about that. I thought that on Friday night you didn't even notice the umpires were there.
No, I didn't. I can't say I did.
I thought the umpires umpired incredibly well, and I think on Saturday there was a bit too much whistleblower intervention in that game, and not when they should have intervened. Jeremy McGovern copped a $1,500 fine for his high forearm to the upper chest of Jack Vine. He probably to the throat, I think, is more accurate, and didn't get the ball taken off him. So that was probably one that those umpires, they were involved when they shouldn't have been, and they weren't involved when they should have been. So that probably cost those.
Well, that's good. Good, and congratulations to those three.
Yep, I think they are a good choice. They don't intervene unless it's necessary. And I think Rosebery in particular tends to make good decisions in big matches. I think he's a very experienced person, WA boy. So a bit of bias there, but I think he's a ripper on the big stage. Back on Thursday to talk about the game, to talk about our tips in more detail and who we think the key matchups will be and who we think the stars will be. Thank you for Tab Touch for supporting us all through this season and helping us bring this program to you. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.